All right, welcome back everyone to the Branding Gurus podcast, and I'm excited today with this special kind of project we've got going on called Freshly Wrapped, an inside look at label branding strategies. Today I'm joined by my good friend, Nick Longo. He's a friend of the show. What's up, Nick? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Ryan. Dude, this is going to be so much fun talking shop about what we've done. I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, I'm super excited for the seminar. And this has been all really fun. And so I'm excited to let everyone out there know about it. And even if the people can't make it to the seminar in California, in Long Beach, I think there'll be some valuable information in regards to the branding and strategies and everything we've done so far.
Yeah, for sure. And thanks for, inviting me to come along on this thing. Like you said, looking forward to the conference, but even more so what we've done so far independently, on this project is going to be really great to talk about. So let's do it, man. Excited.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. So just to give everyone a little background about what we got going on. So I was reached out to from the California Craft Brewers Association, and they have a big conference they do every year called the Craft Summit. And this year it's going to be in Long Beach, California. The last couple years it's been in Sacramento. But yeah, they reached out and they wanted to do some sort of label branding seminar. I immediately thought of my boy Nick down there in Southern California. It's a perfect fit for, And so the idea, we kind of evolved and we came across the idea, which is now, called Freshly Wrapped. And the overall idea is just that, we were going to each work with a brewery that wanted to create some sort of new packaging, either a specialty series of beers or a core lineup of beers, and work with those breweries and kind of develop a rich case study and some branding strategies to kind of like present that, live in front of an audience to kind of show the process of what it's looked like working, working with somebody who specializes in branding and familiar with, obviously the beer industry and developing packaging. So Nick, man, like, why don't you give us a little bit of a intro about who you're working with and what they got going on so far.
Yeah, for sure, man. We got linked up with our friends over at Trademark Brewing Company, and they're brand new in Long Beach, California. I got to visit them probably about a month before they were opening. And it's run by Sterling and Ilana, and they are a great couple kind of putting it all in on this brewery. And I was so blown away at one, how huge the spot was, what an endeavor they are taking on.
Yeah.
It's no small little brewery. This place looks like a flagship place. And so we got to spend some time and kind of working with what was existing as far as an existing brand that was there more for store, more for layout, more for maybe interior graphics, a little kind of done for the brand to be on social media, anything they would need at that point. The one thing it hadn't kind of translated into anything yet was their core line of canned beers. So it was just the perfect opportunity to work with them, and a challenge too, because of them having something already done and very new. They weren't in any kind of stage of kind of like rebranding or being a company that had been out there for a few years and was looking for like a refresh. So I hope this will be a good example to show other breweries out there that even if you have just started or if you haven't, how important it is to sit down with a designer, understand the true ethos of what this brand is, who they are, if they're a person, what would they be, how would they talk? And then bring that, translate that into the design of the can. And the result is you just have something so much more real, so much more personality filled. And I think that's where we are at this point now. And I really feel happy with what we've done. And it was a great experience meeting with them and kind of just walking them through the process. I think you and I both kind of have a very similar process in doing this, but it's also going to be neat to see the little nuances and the difference when we take people behind the scenes on how a core brand of cans would look for a brewery.
Right. Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think like there was at one point where there was a little bit of communication back and forth in the beginning, where you know we thought that maybe that this particular project with Trademark was maybe not going to be an ideal fit, but we kind of after some conversations came to the understanding that like you know there probably are a lot of breweries in a similar situation where you know you might have some kind of foundational branding. You know, or maybe it's even just kind of like a basic kind of brand identity where you've got maybe some colors and like logo and just kind of a general baseline brand identity. But then you're ready to go into packaging. You know, you're ready to go into cans or some sort of specialty bottles or something like that. And like, you know, how do you translate a brand identity into a package, right?
Exactly. So, yep.
Yeah. So I think that's going to end up being a good case study and examples showing what that, you know, how that could translate and all that.
And they're both a little different in a way, like you said. And at one point you think, what more can you do if something's already established for a brand or for a brewery? And we found that there were plenty, and it was interesting to just try out a lot of different options to see what was working. But I think the most important thing is a brewer and a brewery owner gets to see how much goes into these things. Cause very successful brands out there don't happen by accident. They happen by a lot of background strategy. and we're learning every time we go through these, how to improve that, how to make it easier for the client to be able to communicate what it is they want. And then also us as designers have to give them enough, of a background and an experience to have them trust us with this process. You know, that's always an interesting hurdle to get over, but we got there, I think, immediately once we showed them the results of sitting down. We spent a few hours together. We had them fill out the questionnaire, and we made a really great brand strategy document before we even did any of the designs. And I really feel like that makes the designs that much better when you do sit down with them, and then it's like a slam dunk. You know, obviously there's changes and a lot of little minor revisions along the way, but I think we really feel like we nailed it so quickly because of how much time we spent up front.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's going to be a big focus on during the seminar, and we'll get more into that, into the second section of the second part of this Freshly Wrapped series.
Yeah.
Right, of the strategy. And I think I had a similar, you know,
situation. How was
yours? Yeah, right. Very similar situation. The folks that I'm working with is Big Stump Brewing, and they are in Sacramento, California. But they are going to be opening up another tap room in Napa, which I think will be a huge step for them. And I know I have friends in the Napa area, and I think they're ready for some more, you know, great craft beer to be going into that area. Big Stump, man, I think it's a great contrast to Trademark. Trademark being, you know, so new. They do have a bit more, it's kind of interesting because they're so new, yet they have, I think they had a lot more brand development done than Big Stump did. And Big Stump, the owners come from a kind of a corporate background. And so they know business really, you know, really well. They've obviously been running their business very well. They're making great beer.
Yeah.
What they've done is like, they've been able to make it so far with just some very core basic elements of a brand, basically just like kind of a logo, and you know, a website that was working well for them.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and so they, you know, and it, so, it, but over these years, I think it's a great contrast again to like what you've got going on with Trademark, in that Big Stump over the years have kind of realized that like, hey, like maybe we need to like kind of step up and start creating this like more solid brand, you know, especially now that they're trying to push out some more packaging into distribution. Cause like now they're going to be on a shelf and they're like, well, you know, those people don't have the experience of coming in our tap room if they're at, you know, at a store or looking at the shelf. So, a similar thing, like, they were really surprised about like the strategy part of it and how much we were able to uncover. We did a lot, like it was probably like 60-70% of it was the strategy part of it before we even got into the design. So
isn't it such a neat thing to see, on the other end, them really start to appreciate that and like eyes light up certain point, and then they really get the story behind what's going to obviously be on the labels. But I think it gives a brewer and an owner of a brewery the kind of a little bragging rights. Like, they can talk about that can now and be like, you want to know what this means? You know, like,
yeah.
It's so cool. I think it makes a connection to them. And maybe sometimes a company might fear that a designer is going to come in and take over and show them stuff and be like, my way or the highway. And that's not how true designers want to partner with their clients. This is the way to do it. And I think what we're showing is going to be a really great example to, you know, to enhance this process along, and hopefully others will kind of understand how important it is and then, you know, reap the rewards as well. Cause that's really what it's all about. You mentioned, you know, you mentioning the cans being now in retail or being on shelves outside of the brewery. And that's a huge thing that we were talking about a lot, was the fact that no one's going to be there standing right next to it saying, try this beer, right? It's the label itself. And a few things we discovered that we really made, we drove home, were be different, be unique and different, but obviously be, you know, communicative. And second was we really kind of fine tuned what the information needs to be on the front and what can go to the back. You know, don't clutter so much on the front to make it such a confusing offering. Let's take a few things and say, you know what? Someone's going to take the time to look at the back. They'll read this, right? Like, they'll figure out a little bit more, but let's drive it home. So there's no confusion. Everything that's clearly on the front was there. And like, and that really helped dictate the design. So if we put too much on there, you know, both of us were like policing this, saying, well, we agreed to be a little lighter, so let's pull back. You know, maybe this can go over here or on the side. And we did 360s of the can to make sure it was like looking good when you turned it and everything. So it's all those little things that hopefully working with the designers are going to bring you, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So, yeah, just to kind of recap again on this whole freshly wrapped thing. So this is freshly wrapped is going to be an educational seminar at the Craft Beer Summit. That's going to be in Long Beach, California. And the actual freshly wrapped seminar is going to be at 11:35 a.m.
Not 11:34, 11:35.
Not 11. You know, you probably want to get there by 11:34.
Yeah, get there at 11. We're expecting a line out the door.
Yeah, it's going to be packed. Yeah. Yeah. So that's on Thursday, September 12th at 11:35.
Excellent.
Yeah, in Long Beach. Yeah, so we both we sat down and kind of did some interviews with Trademark and Big Stump. Yeah, man, Nick, thanks for joining in on this whole project. It's been a lot of fun working together.
Yeah, man, my pleasure. I knew it was only a matter of time.
Yeah, man. Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, yeah. So stick around. Listen to these interviews. We've got kind of introducing Big Stump and Trademark. And then, yeah, stick around also for the episode two or part two of the freshly wrapped kind of little mini series, I guess. And yeah, I hope you enjoy that. And we'll be back again for part two. All right, cool. So joined by Alex and Larissa Larrabee, and they are the owners of Big Stump Brewing in Sacramento, California, and soon to be Napa. So that's exciting news. But hey, how's it going, Alex and Larissa? How are you doing?
We're doing great today, Ryan. How about you?
Very, very good. So I'm excited to, awesome. So yeah, excited to kind of talk with you about this kind of seminar that's going on, you know, and to dig into a little bit about who you are as a brewery and who you are as a brand, and kind of go over a little bit about the label branding we're coming up with for you. But why don't you just kind of introduce yourselves and who you are and you know, who Big Stump Brewery and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I guess Larissa and I originally came from corporate backgrounds, actually, and would have been about 5 years ago. We were both living and working in San Francisco, and all our money was going to rent. But I had home brewing as a hobby for a long time, and Larissa was extremely indulgent and wonderful. And And essentially, I was homebrewing in our apartment a few times, and then I said, oh, this isn't good enough for me. So I bought an all-grain system that we put in her parents' backyard in El Dorado Hills, and then I'm basically living there on the weekends. And so the whole thing kind of snowballed. You know, you have a different perspective on that.
No, Alex came home one day. We'd both got home from work and been a long, stressful week. And he looked at me and said, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was like, okay, great. What do you want to do? And he looked at me and he said, let's open a brewery. Not quite what I expected. but I said, okay. So we made a few deals. And with that, we decided to leave San Francisco. We got extremely fortunate and were able to take our jobs remote in a slightly different capacity, but really took that risk. And we moved up to Sacramento so Alex could focus on brewing and on his pilot system. And within that time, our deal was he had to enter into as many homebrew competitions that were available in California to see how he did, because I liked his beer, but I wasn't quite sure on the measure of everyone else and what that meant for like really putting everything into this crazy, amazing, terrifying project.
Yeah. For paying your mortgage with pint sales.
Yeah. It's kind of important you have good beer.
But in 2014, Alex was quite accomplished and won the California State Fair for Best of Show. And so at that point, I didn't really have any other reasons to say no or grind my feet into the ground.
And I was able to line up a part-time job at a commercial brewery as well, which actually ended up going under, but was an awesome, awesome education in what not to do.
Yeah. That's so definitely a great experience.
So from that point on, we just really focused our attention and time and passion to opening up Big Stump Brewing Company.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, the real life experience is, you know, I think, like you said, crucial, because everybody that I know, they're like talking about running a brewery. They're like, yeah, it's, you know, a lot of unexpected things, or it's not quite what you think it's going to be, you know. So similar thing, I just think for running a business as like a designer or somebody doing marketing or any kind of person that starts a business, you don't realize how much of like the business aspect there is versus your passion. You know, you're passionate by your craft, but there's this business side of it too. So
no, that's what people most of the time is, you know, getting over leveraged on debt or cash flow issues. It's 9 times out of 10, it's not the underlying product quality. It's a business issue.
Oh, I was just to say one thing for us is having more of a corporate business structured background. That definitely gave us some insight and perspective, but also some frustration, because at the end of the day, you're the problem solver. You don't have an IT tech organization or group to call up and say, hey, my internet's down, or you don't have specialized departments to resolve particular issues or concerns. It's all up to you. I'm sure you can identify with that one.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. And I think some of the breweries that are being successful out there have a nice business background, or, you know, are smart about it and have hired the right people to run the kind of business aspects of it. You know, not all artists can make, you know, make it, but if you've got the business background, then that's going to be a big help for you. So Big Stump Brewery has been open, I think, for about 3 years now. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yep. Great. September is our 3rd year anniversary.
Yeah. Our first batches were already in the fermenters 3 years ago. This is insane to me.
Wow. Yeah. Congrats. So I'd like to kind of, dig in a little bit about, you know, like when you opened, and all the way up till now. I mean, just kind of, going along with the kind of this seminar, what kind of like branding work have you guys done, leading up, you know, when you opened and even like leading up until now.
Ryan, you're about the extent of our branding work.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's, yeah. So, I mean, I think that's, yeah, I think that's interesting. I think that, I don't say interesting, but like, yeah, I mean, I think there's a fair amount of people in similar situations in regards to that. So, I mean, I just would love to hear how you approached it and what you had completed and it's obviously been working up till now, right? So I'd love to hear like what you had going.
Yeah. I mean, I think from the business and production side, when you get going, there's just so much money that needs to be like made and reinvested, right, to scale up. And so I think a lot of the times it's actually, particularly when you're, you know, 500 to 1,000 barrels kind of starting out, that's maybe one of the first things to get cut sometimes. But obviously, you know, as we've grown now, really appreciate the importance behind a solid and consistent branding, because it really helps, I think, generate growth, and have an identifiable brand in the marketplace is really important now.
And I'll say this opportunity with you and the CCBA has been really incredible, eye-opening. We always knew and wanted to find the direction of creating a brand family and really becoming more emotionally, visually, and just approachable as a brand and who we are and how people identify with us and seeing us on a shelf. But really beforehand, we had so many other focuses. And like Alex said, priorities that we needed to put our time and resources into, that from the beginning, we kind of just got by, if you will. We were fortunate enough to be put into contact with a group of art students in the local Sacramento community who we did not as in-depth of a process that we've gone through with you, but some exercises, and this was also before we had opened, so I think have come a long way in establishing who we are and what our tap room is, and as a brand and a company, what we represent and what we like to stand by. But beforehand, worked with the students on kind of establishing our first footprint of what Big Stump was, and a simple...
That's true. More limited in scope.
A label that first got us some recognition, and that we essentially started with branding, which has evolved over time. And for example, the stump has evolved, but it's still the stump. So
yeah,
I guess that's kind of been our process.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, that was with the Art Institute in Sacramento. And so, you know, we actually had forgotten about that, but that logo did come from somewhere when we started. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's totally, you know, they're like, there's important business decisions when you get started, just like you're saying, you know, and I think like, getting off on the strongest foot possible is great. You know, I obviously advocate for that. When clients come talk to me, I'm like, okay, well, let's, you know, seriously consider, you know, putting as much money as you can into your branding. But with that said, you know, you've got a lot of expenses, you're starting a business, you know, and I've definitely gone the route of creating just a strong, I guess I would say more basic like brand identity. Be that maybe a couple of colors and just like a really strong logo system. And then that could be good. And yeah, until you get up and running, and then you might get to a point maybe like kind of similar.
Yeah. The risk is if you don't put the money up front, you never get to a point to justify doing it. And so, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's totally another good point, because when you open the doors and then you're just putting out fires left and right, and then, yeah, you might get to a point where you may not justify it. I mean, that's actually kind of leading me into the next point, which I think that's a great segue. You know, like why now is it a great time for you to create this kind of like branding system for your labels? Like, well, what, why do you think now is a great time? And like, why do you think it was valuable for you now?
Well, I think it comes in from a few points. We were able to get a new line of tanks, so we have more capacity now. And so, you know, as we look to expand our distribution footprint, particularly in larger retailers, right, where I think there's an absolute expectation to have high-end, consistent branding to be successful in larger retailers. Because, you know, as we expand down into Napa and then something maybe in South Bay, San Jose, kind of after that, it, as we cast a wider footprint, we want it to be recognizable if you're going into any of these stores kind of in Northern California.
Yeah, it's definitely right. Stemming from our growth. We're at a really great positive space right now where production's growing, our teams are growing, and so therefore our brand is, it really needs to thrive and be established and just recognized.
Yeah, if this next year with the second tap room and everything kind of goes according to plan, we'll pretty much double our production in this coming year. And so it was really a necessity and a unexpected blessing to have this kind of come together.
That's great. Yeah. So can you maybe tell me a little bit about the story of how you got to do canning? Because you have you kind of do your sour or more like kind of high end beers in bottles, and you are releasing cans. So can you maybe explain to me like the journey you've had with going into canning and what that was like for you?
Go ahead.
Oh, Alex. Well, we had started with bottling. Everything at Big Stump started off as a home project, I guess. So Alex has this fantastic forehead bottle filler that he designed and built. So as we've again started growing, the bottle filler wasn't able to keep up with the demand that we were trying to get out on the shelves. ultimately, we're excited to move with the trend. Also, it's something that's been established and very prominent now in consumers and their wants. Also, just from a retail perspective, what retailers and vendors are taking for their shelves. But so we just had the natural progression and involvement into getting into canning.
Yeah, cans are largely king these days. And, you know, I think at its core, it's not something to overthink. It's a better price point for the volume for customers. So, you know, of course, you're going to sell more of it just from a basic thing.
And we actually
basic supply and demand. Yeah.
Just recently started our canning evolvement. We did our first run. We did our first run in December of 2018. So just over half a year, but it's definitely now become a prominent feature of our growth.
We also had conversations with larger retailers where the conversation was get into cans or we're going to kick you off the shelf. Yep. And so, you know, okay. And so we actually got that from two major retailers. And it wasn't a sales issue with the bottles. It was just they were eliminating the 22s sections. And so it was right. And so with the sours, the 500 milliliter Belgian kind of style bottles are a little more elevated. And so and that had kind of been, we'd been meaning to make that move for a while. And it's a very specific sour beer looking bottle. And so those really, we tend to retail more as like the premium end product for that. And I guess if anything, we just, when we switched it out, we actually did not change the price, but the bottles went from, you know, 22 ounces to like 16.9 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But people haven't blinked with that.
Yeah. So did the cans, did they do as well or better than you had expected when you started getting into canning?
You know, It's the hazy IPAs in cans, right? And so, and so that, you know, for us, that kind of very, very real market trend has been extremely validated. You know, the Lion's Crown hazy IPA label that you're doing for us as a part of this, you know, is probably, I could pull the ECOS numbers, but 30 to 40% of our production. We just kegged out a fermenter, a 20 barrel fermenter today. I'm dry hopping another 20 barrel tomorrow. And then we're brewing another 20 barrels of it tomorrow and the day after that. And so it's just, you know, it's kind of a constant rebrew for us with that. But if there's any breweries out there that are not making easy IPAs, you should do that and can them immediately. So, yeah.
Right. So yeah, how do you,
it was a little interesting to me because we never really had a breakout beer, a flagship beer in 22 ounce bottles. They all sold relatively consistently, but the Lion's Crown in the can sells almost as much as the next two product lines combined on a month to month basis. So,
Yeah, it's definitely the style of beer, but I think on a consumer factor, the cans are much more desirable than bottles. And if you think about it, seasonality, this time of year, summer, people are doing a lot of traveling and camping and outside adventure. And so obviously the can is a bit more adaptive to that lifestyle.
More robust. Yeah,
great. And this, so is there any... you know, are you trying to get anything else like pushing towards anything else in the can format that might help? Well, obviously, you know, you can't knock, you know, getting, you know, that much sales from a hazy IPA. But I also know that then that kind of affords breweries to try to push other styles that they might enjoy more, like pilsners or other types of, you know, like beers in that sense. So are you using that, or like, are you trying to move towards any other direction in the can format that you were hoping to be another kind of bigger seller for you?
Yeah, you actually know we are. I would say with our hazy IPAs, it with pricing, we are definitely on the upper third of the market, I would say, for that. It's also an incredibly expensive product for us to make, just with the amount of hops that go in there. And so we really don't have an entry tier product. Is that how we would phrase that? Yeah. A lower price point product, because the sours pound for pound, you know, are really our premium product. I would say the hazy, elevated. The hazy IPAs are kind of, you know, on the higher end, but mid tier in their pricing. And then really, you know, for fleshing out the entry level product, we really, you know, I know other breweries have seen extreme success in Kolsch's. We're throwing our name in the ring with our Bohemian Pilsner, PNQ Pils, coming to a store near you. But, you know, and so I think it's something as we get bigger, looking at how we can diversify our product lines to maximize market share is something that's really important.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So I think the last question I think I have for you in this kind of introduction part of this. So what, on a kind of like high level, what kind of like benefit are you hoping to gain from this like freshly wrapped seminar and this kind of project we're doing for you?
I mean, from my perspective, it's really to give a, you know, to create a more packaged and elevated brand that we can kind of organize the business around. And so, when we added the tanks, we've been calling it Big Stump 2.0, but now we've been saying with the Napa expansion, it's Big Stump 3.0. But I mean, I guess it just emotionally for me ties into a lot of stuff as well, because, you know, we're passing 15 employees now, and then that'll when Napa's on board, it's going to be a lot bigger. And so, you know, the idea really with this project was to reflect, to our, have our branding reflect the size of the company we are and are going to continue to grow to be larger than we currently are, right?
And I think from more of an emotional, intimate standpoint, the branding really helps identify who you are as a company, as a business, as a brewery. And so I think on more of a fundamental level, I think this is also really great for all of our employees in the community, our regulars at the tap room, and people just finding out who we are, to be able to connect with us on that emotional level, that they have it in their hand, it's tangible, feeling.
I agree. That's, and I think kind of the approach we're taking here, trying to kind of create like a kind of a brand family or a consistent series of like core beers that will have strong, consistent branding. We'll definitely strengthen the branding and shelf presence and you know, probably connection then to your brand as well. So for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. So closing out this section, like, do you want to let people know where to find Big Stump currently, like online and physical location?
We are in major retailers like Costco and Raley's and Safeway's, and I believe 3 is the minimum I have to state. But then, you know, regionally, our reach goes Truckee through Sacramento and down through the Bay Area right now. There's a lot of thirsty people out there, that's for sure.
We self-distribute, so we're also in a lot of craft and boutique bottle shops. You can also find us at our tap room in Midtown Sacramento. And
downtown Napa in spring 2020.
Okay. Well, perfect. Great. Cool. Thanks so much for participating and joining in on this. It's been so much fun. We'll wrap up here and we're going to jump on the next episode. We'll then be getting into a little bit more of the nitty gritty about how this project has been going and your experience. So hang tight and we'll be back on another episode to dig into that. So thank you, Alex and Larissa, for joining. And we'll be on the next one here soon.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thanks, Ryan.
Stefan from Trademark Brewing Company. Glad you can come aboard with us, buddy.
Thanks very much for having us, Nick.
We made it happen today.
I know. I can't believe it. We're excited for the project, and it's cool to kind of share the story.
Yeah. And I'm glad you guys are not only participating, but it's been kind of a really good experiment to kind of not only do it at a quick pace as we're doing, but at the stage that I think your brewery is in, and I'll give you a chance to kind of talk a little bit about it, but it just seemed to be the perfect time to kind of get in there and work on some of these core brands and these core cans and what they might be. First question is, you know, basically who you guys are and what brought you guys to starting your own brewery.
Oh boy, that's a saga right there. So Trademark is run by me and my partner, who's also my wife. So we're a husband and wife team. It's myself and Alana. When we first met, as the story goes, I said, you know, there's something you should know. And she goes, oh, geez, what's this? I said, I'm really into homebrew. Okay, I can kind of cope with that.
Yeah.
And then little did she know, like 3 weeks later, I turned what was then my garage into a pilot brewery and upgraded from pots and pans and buckets. And she just dove in head first. She's like, this is cool. I can get behind this. She's into, you know, food and wine and culinary and already was immersed in craft beer on some level. And she just dove in head first. I got her a set of brewing boots.
Nice.
And after time, I turned to her, I said, you know, we should do this. And she just looks at me and goes, do what? And we talked about it and we, you know, had lots of encouragement. And, you know, encouragement when you're a home brewer means people like drinking your free beer.
Yeah.
But after some, you know, careful evaluation and careful vetting, we wrote a business plan and I took some time off work to go work at other breweries and mm-hmm. tried to do all the crummy jobs because I knew how to make beer. But I didn't know what it was like to operate 6 different types of keg washers.
Smart.
And to get in the trenches and do all the miserable jobs. And shout out to all the cellarmen out there. So I did all those things, and we said, okay, this is what we want to do. And I made a career shift after about 20 years, and Alana did the same after about 10. And what's interesting, you know, I think what works for us really nicely is that I come from a business operations standpoint, and I'm used to making things.
Yeah.
And Alana comes from a hospitality angle, so she's used to making things operate in a way that, like, creating an environment where people want to be.
Yeah.
And servicing and anticipating their needs, which, I mean, I can never sing her praises high enough. None of this would work if it were not for her.
Yeah. And you guys are, I think, the perfect blend of what you bring to the table with that. Because I remember when I first met you guys and you told me that combo, I was like, why aren't you doing a brewery at this point? Plus your passion, right? You know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a passion project for both of us. And we both, you know, like, you know, making things and getting our hands dirty and creating something and operating a business was something that was familiar to both of us. And it was, you know, if you make a Venn diagram of our skill sets, there's the intersection of overlap is very complementary and balanced. And then our radical extremes, you know, we could not exist without each other in that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, that's very so, cool.
Pretty well.
Tell us a brief update, because I know where you're at right now, but are you still in the soft opening stage? Give us an update on where you're at with the brewery.
No, so we had a lot of delays getting open, which mm-hmm. I know is very familiar to a lot of breweries and business owners in general.
Sure.
And we actually, I'm thinking back now, but we basically found out we could open on like 10 minutes notice on a Friday, and we did a soft opening and had like 300 people show up.
Yeah.
Which is pretty mind-blowing. And we had kind of penciled a tentative grand opening date like a month or two before that, just thinking, oh, that would be a good date to do it. And we looked at each other and was like, let's just do it.
Good.
So our soft opening was only 2 weeks. The difference between the soft and the grand was really time to plan a party and get a few more beers going.
Other than that, it's kind of your full swing, right? Your operation.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this is week 7 of being open to the public. And that means that we've been open for about 5 or 4 weeks after the grand opening.
Cool.
And we're still, you know, you're still ironing out wrinkles. And hey, the foot rail behind the bar just got installed last week, you know,
like
things that are always happening and making upgrades, but we're in it to win it now.
Good. And then when we first met, you know, we kind of were talking about this whole project with this seminar that we're doing and everything. And tell me a little bit about where you guys were at and what brought you to the level of branding you had done up until we started working.
Sure. So
yeah,
we recognize the value of brand and branding. And those are, I kind of put those in different buckets. They have a lot of commonalities, but they're not the same thing.
Yeah.
And we recognized early on that in order for Trademark to be successful, we needed to engage the services of someone that had way more experience than me doing Photoshop.
Yeah.
So we did hire someone who did a great job developing the core brand. He was a restaurant expert who also brought a lot of hospitality considerations to the table, including the layout of our facility.
Yeah.
So when it comes to our front of house layout, like, we had a very clear vision of what we wanted to do. And then he said, well, you know, he worked with our architect, in fact, said, well, you want to have a 5-foot aisle here, and let me tell you why. And it's like, okay, cool. Like these are the things that we kind of know in the back of our mind, but he knows the dimension, right? And when it came to our brand, he had a lot of those considerations made as well. And we're really pleased with a lot of what he did. So that firm was Ken Barnes and BSR Branding. And they did a great job for everything we wanted them to do.
Yeah.
And then as things evolved, we said, okay, well, now we got to get a crowler. And now we want to do packaging. And that's where things get really complicated.
Yeah.
If you look at the shelves, there's great branding. There's other things and everything in between.
Yeah.
And you know, for better or for worse, I don't know if there's a single brand out there that truly has a name or a theme that actually instantaneously adapts to a perfect little 16-ounce cylinder, but
yeah.
We found a lot of challenges. The name Trademark is long, brewing is long, and we didn't know what we wanted to do, and that's kind of when we got involved with you, Nick, and
yeah.
Said, okay, what do we do with this? We have kind of a core foundation that we wanted to certainly not abandon, and we wanted our brand to evolve. And that's where you came in, and I think, you know, kind of did some wizardry to put up with our neuroses and our concerns and take something that was developed for a slightly different use
yeah.
and evolve it and port it and improve it to the next level, which is bringing us to the cans that we'll be looking at CCBA.
Yeah, perfect. And I think I was beyond impressed, I think, when I met you guys first, not only I think with your knowledge and the emphasis you were putting on branding, but also to like your appreciation for it too. And I think sometimes working with people that, and I get it, I've never been the guy putting up the hundreds of thousands of dollars in the actual place, but I'm helping brand them. I'm envious of that, but it was neat to see you guys having such knowledge, you know, and taking, knowing that was a front seat, you know, there was something there that really had to be important.
Especially. Yeah. You know, it's funny looking back, like when we were talking to people about the brewery, people, not in the kindest context. We're like, oh, it's all branding. You know, your beer doesn't matter. I'm like, well, I think it's more than that. But yeah. But developing, it's about communication at the end of the day. And your brand, your image, your brand voice, that's something we're still developing. Those are so critical because you want to identify who your customers are. And that's something I think gets overlooked in smaller scale mom and pops or upstart businesses. You say, well, who's your customer? And they go, well, anyone that likes beer. Well, no, it's more complicated than that.
Yeah, yeah.
And how do you connect with those people, and how do you identify with them, and how do you communicate to them? And then once you've made all those efforts, how do you then adapt what you're doing to actually make sure you're resonating with the people who happen to be showing up anyhow?
Exactly. Those random, like, oh, did we catch them? Are we talking to them the right way? Someone that's precisely. Just a walk-in.
It's just, yeah. Right. Like you may just have, you know, depending on geography or any other number of variables, you may have a bunch of patrons that are your customers and you don't want to ice them out.
Yeah.
You don't want to, you know, I think in beer, you don't want to come off as, you know, kind of snooty and pretentious. That's one that we were certainly aware of. And we were very cautious, even in our naming convention for our beers, to make sure we had beers that, like, no one should be challenged to pronounce your beer name.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's a tough one because some of the stakeholders really do push on that, and it's like knowing that at the very beginning was made it a lot easier too. And I think it's just a more safe way to go too, because then you have to be more creative as well. Finding what's going to work, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm glad you also mentioned too, I think a cool thing that you mentioned was the brand voice is ever evolving. And I love hearing that because even as a brander, I sometimes feel like it has to be so defined before a company even opens its doors. And you give it your best shot, but you're right. You're finding it out almost every day, every week, what's working, what's not, right? So all these things have to be somewhat flexible even down after you've opened and you've tested it out.
Absolutely. I think making the effort in advance also to write down what you want your brand voice to be. And, you know, this gets into mission statements and a whole bunch of stuff that I comprehend, but I don't really run with very well, but revisiting that. And
exactly.
You know, you may find yourself drifting, and a little bit of drift is okay. But every now and then you may just do an offshoot. It's like, well, what was that? Like, don't do that. Like, if we're going to go that direction, let's make a conscious decision, not just something that happened accidentally.
Yeah, I agree. What benefits did the both of you hope to get out of this and the stage of the process and this project in general?
Well, we want to go into cans. There's no question about that. We were, as I kind of alluded to before, I felt challenged by creating a core design that was going to communicate the information that we wanted to, and it needs to be beautiful and eye-catching. And you know, that can be, you know, a Hockney painting, but can it also communicate a message to your customer, and who is your customer? And, you know, kind of going back to what I said a moment ago, there's a huge band of consumers that are, you know, super craft conscious, and they will make the effort to read a really difficult to read label because they're curious what's inside that bottle or that can. There's also, though, a huge chunk of the people out there that say, oh, I like IPAs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're like, that's IPA, actually, but okay. So making sure that you have the beer style prominent and deciding you have to, you know, we actually wrote this in a document a long time ago because it was something that was on our mind. What is the information that's going to be communicated on the can, and how do we prioritize that?
Yeah. It's the hierarchy because it's truly, it's exactly, you give everything equal weight or value and no one knows where to go. And
precisely.
And you have such a, not only do you have a limited canvas, but you have a challenging canvas. You know, it's obviously the vessel of choice, but it's this turning thing, you know. And how many videos have we shared each other rolling the can, showing it, you know what I mean?
Oh, I know. It could beat your head against the wall. And it's exactly. It's like the IPA thing. IPA is, you know, three bold letters. Well, what about a Berliner Weiss?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Okay, that doesn't fit in a 1:1 ratio area. Now what?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that's going to do it for the part one of the Freshly Wrapped podcast series. Make sure you stick around for part two. And if you're going to be in Long Beach going to the California Craft Summit, we hope to see you at the Freshly Wrapped seminar. Bye.